This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 476, brought to you by Scribd.com and iFanboy listeners just like you. So what if I threw a party and all my friends are there? Acquaintances, relatives, the girls who never care. You'll have a whole sorority, hooligans in a big line at the door. Side by side with Sister Box, Chief Wells and Bobby Orr. And invite the Flanagan. Replace the window you smashed down. And apologize to Sluggo. Pissing on his couch. I'll see Mrs. McAuliffe and so many others soon. I'll say I'm sorry for what. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 476. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
I've returned from the land of video games. It's very similar to comic books.
Yeah? Yeah?
In very many ways, but also very
not
different.
As good.
not as good.
Not as good. There you go.
Whoa.
Pander.
Video games are great. Pay my salary.
Okay. Oh, I see. Oh, I see which side your bread is buttered on there, company man. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We will talk about the book. We will talk about the other books, issues, maybe.
Like family issues or psychological stuff?
You may not talk about them directly, but they're going to come up.
Oh, sure.
We're going to talk about some other stuff. We're going to read some listener mail. We're going to have a good time is what we're saying.
Yeah.
So your spoiler warning is now. This is a review show. We're going to talk about what's in the books. There you go. Connor, you had the pick of the week. Thank God I've had the pick of the week.
For months?
For months. Okay, two in a row, but.
Was it hard?
No. I mean, no, right. It was good.
Well, that's good.
No, I got lucky. Those were weeks that it wasn't so bad.
This was an interesting week because I didn't have a lot of books. I didn't have any Image books. I had only like two or three DC books. And I was going down a list of releases and I was getting worried. I was like, I'm already to Marvel. I've only got three books on my list, and then I had a ton of Marvel books. And the pick of the week ended up being Ms. Marvel 13. And now, Josh, did you get a chance to read this?
I did. You told me to read it, so I did.
Well, this was a good jumping on point for people who have not been reading Ms. Marvel. Last issue, if you recall, we talked about was a one shot featuring Loki, and there's been a couple of arcs before that. This is a good place to start. It's not another one-shot. It's the start of a new arc that really is going to delve into Kamala's inhumanness, it seems like. And what I like about this book, this particular issue, is that it really showcases all of the things that this particular comic does really, really well. It starts off with Kamala in training with the Inhumans. So it touches on her as an outsider. If you haven't been reading the book, she was a teenager when the Terrigen Mist bomb blew up, and now she's awakened to her inhuman power. She's a Pakistani girl living in Jersey City, and so she's training into the humans in the beginning, and then she gets home to find that her family's got some friends coming over, and they've got a son, and it's a subtle matchmaking going on, and I loved her reaction to the boy, who's not only smart and handsome, but is in the world of Warcraft, and like she is, and so I loved that whole scene where she gets all flustered with him, and they go out looking for old Bollywood DVDs, and then of course chaos breaks out, and there's a big old fight. And I thought it really does touch upon the cultural aspects, the sort of teen romance stuff, the big action, the Inhumans bits, and all with this. I thought the art in this was really, really fantastic from old Runaways artist. I'm scrolling.
Is that who it was?
Yeah. Takeshi Miyazawa.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right. That makes sense.
Really great facial expressions, body language. I really love the body language from the characters, especially in the scene where she meets the guy. She's playing with her hair and really, really some great bits in that. And I thought this really was a great overview of this book, which I think is really fantastic. And I'm really glad it's doing so well, considering the characters involved and the heroine is very unusual for modern comics. I liked it quite a bit. Josh, what did you think?
This is your first issue. Or any comics.
Any comics, yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah. It's not really your thing, but I wanted to see what you thought of it.
No, I've heard, it's funny, because my radar is pretty good at this point, and I know that you and Paul were talking about it for a really long time, and I was kind of like, you know, I'm sure it's good. I'm probably not going to really like it. But I was like, all right, now, you know, Paul's not here, so somebody's got to talk to you. I'm going to read it. And it was fine. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
I did think it's pretty interesting culturally.
Mm-hmm.
They're not half-assing the fact that she is from, you know, a Pakistani family. And that's a huge part of this book, which makes me think that it's kind of bold, because I don't know that there'd be enough of an audience for that, or we're finding out that there is an audience for that and they were being underserved, which certainly opens up possibilities, which I find very interesting.
Well, I think it's a combination of that, but also I think she's a really compelling character in this very similar sense of the Stephanie Brown Batgirl, so sort of the plucky young superhero that there aren't very many of, and it's sort of like the, and I hate to dismiss her by being comparative, but she's sort of like this female Spider-Man in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
In that personality type and her situation.
So
it works in that sense, and that's a character that a lot of women have gravitated to because they don't have these kind of type of characters.
She's a really interesting character and a well-rendered character.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's got a... what's the word? I don't know. Like, I feel like it had a bounciness to me.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a really fun character.
Yep.
And I like the little Superman moment where she decided she started wearing her costume under her clothes, and she runs to the alley and sort of the classic superhero pulling the shirt open to reveal the costume.
Yeah.
She's really getting to the point of embracing her place in life, but I also really just was impressed with the art. I thought...
Yes.
The style of this book has always been a little off-center, and we've talked in the past about how it's been kind of almost illustrative, more than comic book style, more like children's book art. And that wasn't a derogatory way, but it was just a different style than most comic books. This was I was poring over every page more than I do normally, because I just thought this was so well drawn.
There's a little issue with the bottom of Lockjaw's mouth. But I was happy that in this they decided to go with sentient Lockjaw.
Yes.
Where basically he's like R2-D2. Like, she talks to him, and he's like, huh, and she's like, yeah, you're right. Because this, you can go any way you want to with that. So that's all. I'm always like, oh, Lockjaw, which is stupid.
Well, Lockjaw's her sidekick.
Yeah, I get that.
He's been sent to watch her because she's one of the new Inhumans. And the villain in this is also an Inhuman, and there's a not-so-subtle parallel to Muslims and Muslim extremists and humans and human extremists. Which I thought was also interesting in a book.
I caught that. Are you currently being smashed in a trash can?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
that's fine.
You mentioned R2-D2, and he hasn't gotten quickly enough to turn off the
trash can. Oh, curse my metal body!
So we're gonna have to deal with that for a second. But
I wasn't fast enough.
This book was wonderful.
Any chance I get, Connor?
I get it.
I'm going to.
What was the section they were in?
I threw you off completely.
I have no idea what I'm saying.
10 anymore. Years of at this, and I got
you. You did. Well, it was a
we were talking about extremism.
Yeah, that's fun.
No, it's not. I think it's really interesting that like they went sort of full out. There wasn't like hinting, like it's not a secular Muslim family.
Right.
It's a like a full on like she's dealing with living in two worlds, and it's a book that. I mean, sociologically, I found it super interesting because, like, you've got her brother who's in this like the full-on traditional dress, but he's just depicted as being any other guy, which
he's a little more religious. I mean, it's what's interesting about her family is that she's first generation American from her immigrant parents, and they are much more religious than she is. She is not religious. She's
right.
She's shown going to the mosque, but she's also like many first generation kids of immigrant parents is not quite as religious as her parents, and much more Americanized than her parents are. And she's a very interesting character. The brother's an interesting character. The parents are great characters as well. You know, struggling with their religious belief, but also, you know, wanting their daughter to be happy. So it's been an interesting...
It's different than, you know, Archie Bunker or whatever.
No, it's exactly the same. It's just a different religion we're seeing it through. And I
think that's good.
When this book came out, I really didn't think it would make it past 7 or 8 issues, but here we are at issue 13, and it seems to have a very strong following. I don't know, you know, what that means. That doesn't really mean anything these days, but I like it quite a bit. This is better issues.
I think it's actually a really good example of a book you can give to young girls.
Absolutely.
Which I don't know that many of, but one that's also that's totally part of Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it exists in the Marvel world. It's replacing mutants within humans. So, you know, it's just like all the other ones, you know. And so that's kind of like, it's not like, here's your thing that's a little bit other. Here's your thing for you that's part of it, which is good.
She's very firmly part of it. I mean, she's had a great team up with Wolverine. Loki was in the last issue. Lockjaw is her companion. You know, Captain Marvel showed up at one point. I mean, it's very much part of that world. And it's just that she is in Jersey City. There aren't a lot of superheroes there. So, and why would there be?
She's the new queen of the 201. I was like, oh, come on.
So Ms. Marvel 13 was my pick of the week quite easily. There actually wasn't.
Really?
Yeah, there weren't anything else that even came close to threatening. I had a weird week in which I liked everything I read, but I didn't love anything except for Ms. Marvel.
It's funny because I was just going, I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, I have no idea what my pick of the week would be. I have no idea. Like,
everything was really solid. I enjoyed them all. I was like, well, that was good. But then I was about 3/4 through my stack, and I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, you know that feeling that only you and me and Josh and Paul know, that you get through that halfway through that stack, and you're just like, oh, shit, I don't have anything. So I was really worried. Then I read it to Marvel, and I was like, okay, I'm good. That was fantastic. So, but Astro City 21 was another book that was really good. It was the ending of this arc that we've been really enjoying, looking at what happens when superheroes without superpowers reach middle age and really can't do the job anymore.
Yeah, and it's because I guess we're going to talk about the ending, but I think interesting part about it was, you know, most of it seemed to be around this theme of, well, we can't stop, because then what would we be? And then, you know, they had to stop. They had to change.
You have no choice.
Right, exactly. Which, I mean, I hate to... How apt is that? for comics, like, you know... It's interesting, though, because you took a look at this comic, which is actually a superhero comic that has been going on forever, and no, you don't have to stop. But, like... It speaks to comic readers, I think, to a certain extent.
But also speaks to humans, right? Like,
yeah.
You can't do the things you used to do. Athletes can't perform a certain level anymore. Just as people, you know, I go to the gym almost every day with my friends I'm actually the youngest person in that group, and we're all constantly lamenting that we can't do the physical things we used to be able to do when we were 16 or even 26.
We have to stop this. No one wants to listen to us say this.
That's why I think the book was, this storyline is so compelling, was that you don't ever see that in a superhero sense. I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but
I mean, yeah, not normal, but obviously that's not what they're selling most of the time. I mean, that's what you get in special. That's what you get in The Dark Knight Returns. I mean, that's why that was revolutionary. It's like, ow, this hurts.
Right, you don't get the idea that you have to change your life and you can't do this forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Dark Knight Returns is a very specific story about the end of something. This is more like, hey, I'm slower than I used to be. I can still do this, but not quite as well. And I'm actually a danger to myself and my teammates by being out there. And what does that mean for people who've been not doing nothing else since they were 18 years old or whatever? You know, I like that a lot. It was a good.
Really, but
good
then story. When she rehabs Cracker Jack,
he's
just gonna go back out there.
Maybe we'll see. I mean, his spine was severed in 3 places.
I don't think he makes good decisions.
No, he's an impulse control junkie. And she doesn't really make them either, to be quite honest.
No, that's true.
And that's what made them interesting characters. And that was what was really interesting. I don't know if you read the little basic essay that he writes in the back, is that that's his favorite character, the girl.
Yes, I did read that. And he didn't really go into it very much other than to, you know, here's the story that I told about her, which I found interesting.
But also, you know, it's not necessarily over. The story arc ends.
Sure.
And then Samaritan's like, this isn't cool. But then he gets distracted and has to go save some people. And so
Because the world moves on.
Right. And I wonder if that's either a great way to end the story or something that he can pick up on again later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what.
Well, what's yeah, I mean, book. Realistically, though, that's years away.
Right.
Because of the way that this book is. And, you know, it was a really long arc for this book. And it was nice. I'm glad that we're going to get to move on to another thing. The next one probably won't be as great. And then the one after that will be great. And, you know, but they're all different things. And he's. It's such a good book.
Astro I know we City keep saying is that. Like a box of chocolates.
God.
Yeah, there you go.
I can't even speak to that. I don't even like I want to groan, but I just I all right.
So
fine.
This was the second to last issue of Miles Morales, the Ultimate Spider-Man.
I didn't know that.
And so the big final page also same thing with Fantastic Four this week. Next month is the final issue of that, which means Secret Battle Wars or whatever is happening after that. So
what's great is that if you don't pay any attention to what the cover is, that last page is still going to be a surprise for you.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, Dr. Doom. And then I looked at the cover. I was like, oh, it's right there. I didn't know. I didn't see.
It feels like they're not going to have enough time to wrap up the story.
I had that exact same feeling because there's a lot of things swirling around. They've got the... is it Jessica Drew? Is she the other Spider-Woman?
She's like, the Peter Parker clone.
Right. They've got her whole thing going on.
We don't know who these two Spider-Villains are still.
Right. The first six or eight pages in here. And then you've got all of Peter, not Peter, sorry, Miles' relationship stuff. And he's still captured by Hydra. I mean, do you remember? Here's the thing. Do you remember that when Peter Parker, Ultimate Peter Parker, died, it felt like, well, that was sudden.
Yes.
Like everything, like there was all of these interesting things swirling around, all these great stories, and then it was just over.
You're right.
It was like, oh no, he's dead. And I guess that makes sense because you wouldn't finish those stories, but also this is not real life. So.
But also, and that's how life goes. But I didn't really think of a parallel of that here, and I wonder if that's intentional or not. But it just feels like there's a lot of story balls in the air that are not going to get wrapped up. Keep it together. That are not going to get wrapped up in one issue, at least in any kind of satisfying way.
No. So, which is disappointing because
and I'm fairly certain Miles Morales will live on in the new Marvel universe, but
that was my butt.
Like in the the last page is all these questions. That was your butt. In the end,
story balls. My butt.
Can Spider-Man survive both Doom and Hydra? Yeah, probably. Can Genki put his trust in Miles anymore?
Yeah.
I don't really care. Where do Katie and Miles go from here? Hopefully nowhere cuz she's evil.
It's true. And, we in the Valentine's Day show, we talked a lot about red flags. And let me tell you, brother, That's a big old red. Her hair is actually a red flag.
Her parents being Hydra agents, or her dad at least kidnapping him and beating him, and she being along for the ride is a big red flag.
She is Kate Bishop, though.
She is, but think about the Thanksgivings going forward.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I mean, one year it's gonna be fine because he's gonna be with his dad, but then the next year they got to alternate to hers, and it's gonna be awkward because hey, remember the time you drugged and kidnapped me and then beat me? That was
well. The thing
time.
Is, though, if she's Jewish, then you're probably going to be with the one family every single Thanksgiving
forever,
and then because the other family will always get Christmas. I guess I'm just making that up,
right? Or if one is local and the other one is 3,000 miles away.
yeah, I like at this point that in the Ultimate Universe is that the names don't. They're just like we need a name. Like the other universe exists only to pick names from, so they don't have to make them up. We'll just call her Kate Bishop.
Okay, right.
It doesn't have to do
Detective
the other
Maria
one.
Hill. It's kind of like the alternate know, version of.
It doesn't matter though because it's over. So there's not even any point in exploring that case.
Oh,
I need
boy.
A name. I don't want to make one up. I don't know. Reed Richards, whatever.
What is Southern Cross number one?
As I said, when I got through my books, I was like, "This. I feel like I'm not getting everything out of the week that I should, and I'm trying to find something else." This is a new number one. From Becky Cloonan writing,
oh,
Andy
right.
Belanger
yes,
on
this.
Art, and it's a new Image series. Hey, check that out!
What
about? I
don't
know.
Believe it, Josh.
So it's a girl gets on a transport tanker ship kind of thing, spaceship that goes to the moon of Titan, and she's there investigating. Or she's going to settle the affairs of her sister who was working there. They do 6-month tours for basically an energy company that is mining the Moon of Titan, but you find out that she's investigating it as well, and she's like, okay, in terms of tone, mm-hmm. I'm gonna go with the first Alien movie.
Okay, good tone.
They're on a big ship, but they're all kind of working class folk, mm-hmm. And they're on their way to do a job. It's not adventure sci-fi; it's working class sci-fi, which I love.
Right, that's a great movie.
And at first, I was like, this feels really familiar. Like, it feels like Image specifically has been doing books like this a lot. Mm-hmm. But as I kept going, I really liked it. I really found myself enjoying it. You know, it's obviously there's something going on where they have a female protagonist. And you know, it's written by a woman. And they're speaking to that audience and that need. But it's done really well. I was like, okay, this is what people are talking about when they're talking about doing books that are inclusive and I guess almost just more gender neutral, really.
Right.
But that's beside the point.
Is there at any point a xenomorph?
No, but there could be. But no, that's the other thing. Like, so far, there's only the slightest hint of supernatural, and I don't know if it's really that or if it's just physics, because there's an engine.
Beyond the sci-fi setting, what is the genre?
It looks like murder mystery, or okay. Is what it's going to be. Murder mystery in a big industrial space tanker, and then she's going to get to the colony on. Basically, you know, it's like people
is
who
it like a locked room murder mystery. Like, they're on the ship and they have to solve it before they get to their destination.
No, I don't think so. I think that she's going to meet the cast on the journey. It takes a few days to get there, and then the ship only goes every 6 months.
Okay,
it's like
no one else write that book. I'm going to write that book.
It's like people who work in you know, like the farthest reaches of Alaska at an oil camp, or like in North Dakota or something. It's like that kind of thing. So she's going there, and you know, all the people who go there are kind of weird and kind of crusty, or like, I mean, basically, it's very similar to Whiteout, I suppose.
Oh, I see.
In that sort of sense, but it's in space. I thought, let's see, Lee Lowridge on colors, not Jordy Belair, because she can't do everything apparently.
She only has so many hours, Josh.
Andy Belanger's art I liked a lot. There are a couple of places. It's super busy. Like, there is stuff everywhere, which is really impressive. A couple of places. He got creative with the storytelling and the direction and not to the most efficient you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like the word balloons were going all over the place, and it was like, that's really cool, but it didn't quite work in telling the story as clearly as possible. I can forgive that entirely, but it's the thing I noticed. I don't know. It was kind of a surprise. Really interesting. I'm totally on board for the second one. I think you should check it out. You know, it's Becky Cloonan writing
Listen,
it.
Listen, man. All right, fine. All
right. I know. I know. It's Becky Cloonan writing it, so that's a bit of a, like, I like her art, but can she write a story? And she's writing a good story. So, yeah, there's another one. Sorry.
it's like I feel like Newman and Seinfeld talking about the mail. Like, it never stops. And sometimes it's holiday season and the Christmas catalogs come, and I just need to not read more books. But I will.
I tell you something. When the economy was different and you had Vertigo doing these kind of books, they could only put out so many.
Right.
They had to pay all the people up front, and there was like, okay, we can just move these out one at a time. So, you know, maybe that's the real reason that I'm nostalgic for that era. it's not quality. It's not that those books were necessarily better. Some were not.
There's a lot of
good
them.
Book.
We need to have a talk with somebody about this.
Southern Cross is the name of the ship, by the way.
Okay, that makes
sense. I thought it was going to be. I was like, I don't know what this is going to be.
Actually,
about.
No. Actually, that's. I think that's why I didn't read it. Is because I thought right. It was going to be religious.
Oh, I thought it was going to be about the South. You know, crosses.
Well, then the that. South. Yeah, but I would assume that.
No,
would
but
be
with
there.
The you know.
And bad that's actually times. Why I didn't look into it more. So that's why. All right, well, I will look at it.
It's good.
I like a good murder mystery and sci-fi, so that's fine.
Yeah. There's a gravity drive that's a like in the, and it's mysterious. That's the only sort of supernatural thing, which if it was not supernatural at all and only hard sci-fi, I'd be down with that.
Well, even a hard sci-fi needs gravity drive stuff to make their
sci-fi
work.
Yeah, I know. But if it turns out just to be physics-based and not because there's like, what's the monster movie in space with Lawrence Fishburne?
Oh,
terrible.
Horizon?
Yeah, terrible movie. Whoop his ass, Larry! That's what the guy in the audience yelled when I saw it. I remember that.
Or maybe there's a little kid in the under the floor powering the ship.
Oh no!
Josh, tell people about Scribd.
Scribd. Is it Scribd?
Scribd.
I believe it's Scribd.
They
just don't have an E.
That's how the kids say it. I like to say Scribd.
Okay, that's fine. Scribd is like Netflix for comics. Scribd. The show today is brought to you by Scribd.com. With a subscription, you will get access to more than 10,000 comics from Marvel, IDW, Top Shelf, Valiant, Dynamite, Archie, and more. They're the only subscription service that gives you all that variety for one monthly price. On top of that, you will get the unlimited access to their huge library of ebooks and audiobooks, more than a million titles altogether, all available anywhere, anytime. Head over to scrib.com/ifanboy, that's key, to get started with a free month. Get a whole month to play around in there. Even more importantly, Scrib makes sure that you can find your way to comics and books you're going to love. They've got hundreds of collections curated by their team of editors. And as you read, they'll tailor their recommendations for you based on the titles that you have loved or not. So you get to rate things. And
everyone just wants to rate things.
We just want to resist better than that and by how much, but keep it to five.
How many stars?
How many stars, Josh?
I give this reading 3 stars.
Go to scribd.com/ifanboy right now, and they'll set you up with a free month to get started. That's 30 days of unlimited reading, and you'll be supporting our show. So it's a win-win. scribd.com/ifanboy.
2.5 stars. You got the information out, but you could have been better.
I think that's totally clear. I had a cold, though, and I got fumbled on my own tongue.
That's what she said. All right.
Story balls. Howard the Duck, number one. Written by another Image artist, Chip Zdarsky,
or
as you pronounce it, Zdarsky. I have to open it. I wasn't paying attention. it's a number one. Basically, we're going back to Howard the Duck. Oh, Joe Quinones, of course.
Yeah.
On art, and Rico Renzi on color. It was very Howard the Duck.
Right.
It was
what
like
does that mean to people who don't know about Howard the Duck.
I've never really been into Howard the Duck, so there's the movie, but it's not that. It's like Roots, Steve Gerber Howard the Duck.
Where I feel like this book exists solely because James Gunn put Howard the Duck at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I think so.
Which was a lark, by the way. I think they had a different plan for the end of the movie. So,
yeah,
James Gunn's well, why the fuck not moment becomes this book.
Well, that's how comics works.
That's true.
So Howard is a private investigator. And he works in the same building that She-Hulk's office is in, because that's where they let people with superpowers or people who are involved with superpowers work.
The regulations and the insurance issues mean only a certain number of buildings can handle superpowered superhero businesses.
Yeah.
You should get a permit for that.
There are a lot of duck-based puns in this book.
And you love puns. You are a guy who loves puns.
No, I'm not. I'm not a guy who loves puns. There is a training montage in comic book form. I am understood that a lot of people found this very funny.
You did not.
I didn't really know. I did try it because I wanted to know. And then at the end, I guess this is your spoiler, but like he's in a cell with Rocket Raccoon.
Oh.
And I believe there's a xenomorph in that page in the background, just in case you needed that.
Is he off planet or is he on planet?
He looks to be off planet. I believe he's off planet. He's captured and taken somewhere. I wanted to like it a lot, but it's one of those things that humor in comics is super subjective. And
well,
I think that a lot of people,
super subjective, right?
I know, but in comics specifically, like it's very referential and it's very Marvel referential and it's punny, as I believe I mentioned.
Were there puns? You said something about it, but
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like it's funny because the character really feels like a character from another time. Like I was like, nobody would write this character today, which I do find charming because he's grumpy and he's not really nice and people don't like him. And he wears an old-timey suit, and he's a duck.
I just remember watching that movie on VHS with a bunch of friends at Patrick Gilmore's house.
Uh-huh.
And not even liking it as an 8-year-old or however.
Yeah, I remember not liking it as an 8-year-old, but being really excited beforehand. I thought,
yeah.
Well, this is going to be a thing for me.
Because it was George Lucas.
Yeah.
And it was a duck. And it was Marvel Comics. It was OCL.
I don't think
that
I knew any of those things.
I knew all those things
at the time.
I was
and
super
then, and
excited.
And I remember the play duck joke specifically and thinking, this is not for me. You know what I mean? Like,
because anyone out there wondering, Josh has not changed ever. He's always been like, he's always been
it really. And it's not even that I was like offended by play duck, but I was like, oh it's going to be like this. Huh. And then as a result, like I don't remember anything else about it other than that moment when I thought, I don't think that's good.
I don't remember anything about the movie. I just remember hating it.
Were there duck boobs in that? Was that like a thing in the play duck?
It could have been.
I think so.
Probably.
That's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable.
So after the we always announce the pick on our Twitter and Facebook pages so that people can be prepared for the show if they want to check out the pick beforehand or just know what the pick is. And after announcing that Ms. Marvel 13 was the pick, a lot of response from people clamoring for Action Comics 40 being the pick all over our Facebook page, and got some Twitter replies. This book was terrible.
I was just opening it up and be like, yeah, wait, I did read this. What happened? And then the second that you said this book was terrible, I see a big picture of Bizarro on the cover, and I went, yes, yes, it was terrible.
Now, I have to admit, I would put Bizarro up there with Ebola and unrelenting physical pain as just some of the worst things. I hate Bizarro.
I do want to preface this in that, like, it was perfectly fine.
Let me preface it. It was drawn the fuck out of by Al Cooter. It was a beautifully drawn book.
And if you like Bizarro, I think that you are totally in for this to be your thing. But I am with Connor. I hate Bizarro. I hate
Once
reading.
The backward talk starts, I check out.
Uh huh.
And I started actually reading everything that wasn't Bizarro dialogue. So uh-huh. I didn't 3 or 4 pages in, I didn't even read the Bizarro dialogue anymore. I read Superman's dialogue and Metallo, and that was it. I think the art was great. I love the gag where Superman casually catches the bowling ball flying at his head, and stuff like that was great. Also, we should mention, this is where he loses the beard. Not cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Some magic pulls it off his face. I understand, people. If you like this, great. I'm not saying it was a badly written book. I just hate Bizarro with a... It's like my eye starts twitching whenever Bizarro pops up. And so I've only ever liked 3 Bizarro stories. 2 of them involve him being a failed clone of Superman. That's the only way I liked Bizarro. One mm-hmm. was the Man of Steel miniseries, John Byrne. One was in the animated series. And then the only other time I liked Bizarro was in All-Star Superman.
All-Star Superman.
Yeah, that's it. And even then, I was on the edge constantly.
Yeah, like, okay, let's not go on with this too long.
Right, so... I hated this because I hated Bizarro. No knock against the creative team.
No.
Great art. Wonderful art. Great pack. Nothing against you. I just hate Bizarro.
When we're done with Bizarro, we're going to be back on board fully.
Well, we're done now. This is it. One issue.
Let's be sure of that before we wade back in fully.
That's true. But I will not be picking up the Bizarro series, which this is the precursor for.
Ugh.
Yes.
Ugh.
It was amazingly drawn.
Maybe someday, like, you'll be reading like 40 issues into a Bizarro series like me and Deadpool. And you'll be like, I didn't see this coming.
When does Aaron Cooter get to draw the new costume, by the way?
Because
this is still the old, terrible, crappy costume.
I don't even notice them anymore. I'm tired of the costumes and the well, what if we do this? It was fine before. And I really, like, I hate to be that guy who's like, ugh. But really, no one has even come close to improving on or adding to what existed previously. Not even close.
Well, I like the tweaks, but yeah. Well, the jeans and t-shirts coming back. That was the whole
thing. The tweaks are nice. The tweaks are like Darth Vader, where he looked a little different in Empire, and he looked a little more different in Jedi, but basically it was the same thing.
So did you read All New X-Men 37?
I believe I did.
Were you confused because All New X-Men 38 came out a month ago?
You know what? I didn't read it because I opened it up and I thought, I don't know what this is.
37
and I just stopped.
Was a one-shot issue with Emma Frost training young Jean Grey in Madripoor. Really worth mentioning because the art by Mike
Del Mundo
is awesome.
Mike of the World.
Mike of the World can draw everything. He's great. And I thought, yes. I love that it was very unconventional and a little bit of a stylistic break for this book, which is not always been drawn by Stuart Eminem, but always sort of in that style.
Even
the fill-in artists have been that in that style. This is a very different.
It's one of those alternating things where it's Eminem and Asrar,
and they're very similar.
Yes.
So this was great, and I like when you can do that in a one shot because it's not so jarring because the story is even a little jarring because you're off.
I will tell you that I think it's what I downloaded and I opened it up and I was like, I don't want to read this right now. And I think I just forgot because I was like, it's a whole other thing. And I just...
It's a really fun one-shot of
I will read
Emma training Jean and being like, this is how the world really works.
It's like a thing with me. When I get the comic book, I open it up, and I don't always remember where we left off, but I want it to – sometimes I just want it to be familiar so I can just hop back on that track. And if it's a different kind of thing, I'm just like, I can't speed myself up to do this right now.
Well, what's interesting is that the next issue, which is 38, which came out already, which really threw me off when that happened.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but that's weird.
Is like some crossover with some book that I –
That's what I thought was going on. I just thought, I don't want to –
that I don't read, so I was like, I'm not even going to read this, but
I think I read halfway through the last one. That's I think, and I looked at this and thought this must be the next thing of that thing I didn't read.
Yeah, it's the Black Vortex chapter 4. I don't even know where chapters 1 through 3
yes!
are.
Yes, that's true, and that's weird.
I'm gonna skip 38.
That's fine.
Come back for 39.
That's fine. I wanted to give a quick nod to Sheltered, which was an Image series. They do end, people.
Is it the final issue? Are you sure?
Yes.
I feel like I can never trust you anymore.
At the end it says end, and there's a big letter from Ed Brisson about how it's the end. So it's the end. This is the one where the group of teens are they're in the end of the world colony because Yellowstone is gonna explode. Mm. So they all go in there, but then the kids, the super smart head kid. Decides to convince all the other kids, the head boy, decides to convince all the other kids to kill their parents, and that touches off a whole thing that was the series.
What?
The cops come in.
Because the parents are a bummer?
Because the whole point is to be survivalist through the change in the world, and if the parents are there, there's going to be less resources, and they've already had the generation of children, so they are not useful.
Get lost, old man!
Yeah, so basically, he's like, listen, they're not going to like it, but ultimately they don't understand it.
What is the age cutoff for murder in this scenario?
I think it's like the parents is the generational.
So
split.
Would I make it as a?
Well, you don't have kids. You wouldn't. I mean, you wouldn't be there. There's no scenario in which you'd be.
Let's assume I found a way in.
Uh huh.
Am I killed for just being older, or because I don't have kids?
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure you're fucked.
I can bring a lot to the table, Josh.
You're kind of an oldster. In fact, at that point, I mean, let's be honest, you got a whole group of teenagers. You're the creepy guy.
That's true.
You're totally so you're dead. And this was totally like a wrap-up issue, like after the fact, the FBI, the whole thing. And then at the very end, there's like a last note, like a stick in the eye as somebody walks away from the TV and you see urgent Yellowstone eruption. That's the end. Like, oh, fuck, they were right. Oh, well. The world is going to end.
So did he say
volcano in the middle of our country, as I know from my son's favorite programs, is set to kill us to the voice of Patricia Clarkson.
There's so many things that are going to kill us. But was this book that ended on its creator's whim, or was it for other reasons? Did it say why in the book? Was it the story?
I feel like
over?
It ended. Yeah. I feel like they did their 15 issues, and that was the story. And they're going to go on and do other things. It was. I read the whole way through. I never lost interest. It was a good little story. It was a fun time.
So if you find that interesting, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you can buy the Sheltered Trades. I assume there will be two volumes.
Three
volumes?
Yes.
Oh, five each. Okay. Three volumes of Sheltered. If you like that kind of story, even though Josh has spoiled the ending for you. ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you can make all your Amazon purchases. You just click on that link. Takes you to Amazon. We get a piece a year purchase. You don't lose any money. Only Amazon does. That's one less drone. Honestly, not even one. It's like one less drone component at the end of the year for Amazon. So that really helps us out. We appreciate everybody who does that. If we see people making giant purchases all the time, we appreciate those who do. ifanboy.com/register.
Anonymously.
Right. Oh, we don't see what you're buying. We do not see what you're buying. We just see a list of what has been bought through the app. And it's always fun around Valentine's Day. ifanboy.com/registration is where you can become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. That's how you can help the show directly by contributing to keep the lights on, keep the equipment going, keep the server costs going. Our old buddy Dave Carr tweeted out this week that he was happy that our content was still all available because he went back and listened to some old shows. And those shows are available because we pay for the server bill, which is not inconsiderable considering how many years of content there are. So thanks to everyone who does all these things to keep iFanboy going.
Many gigabytes. Many gigabytes died to bring us these.
Let's do an email. Poor Bothans.
Andrew B. says, I'm sure this is asked a lot, but I've been reading books from the 1980s, 90s, and some of the New 52, but I don't know if I can start reading any of the current series without being lost. I don't know if I should just pick a series and then read all the back issues I can find. That's a lot of work, Andrew.
We haven't had this question in a while. I thought it would be good to return. to where do I start questions?
At the beginning, always, right? You go back to the 30s and you say,
well, what's
all right.
I'm trying to picture this, what he's talking about here, because so he's been reading books, old back issues of the 80s and 90s, and some of the New 52, because the New 52 started over at issue 1. And there are actually a lot of people who jumped on there because they did start over at number 1s. But the current series, they're not that far into it. You know, we're 4 years now at this point.
Yeah, not even. But three.
So if you really wanted to read all of them, it wouldn't be that difficult. But it would be expensive, but it wouldn't be that difficult. But you don't need to, right? Right, Josh? Or have you come around because now you're part of the binge culture?
No, you don't need to. That's the great myth. You should. You know, what's funny is that now more than ever, way more than when we started this, you don't need to do that. Like, they keep starting everything over. Like,
that's
the whole
true.
Point,
that's
it's
true.
It's like the industry has become, you know, reboot heavy, which, you know, a lot of old people get really tired of. But for newer readers, it's actually extremely useful. Like, there's, you know, Marvel only, you know, you could start a couple of years ago if you wanted to. I mean, I just read, this is a perfect example. I just read the first issue of Ms. Marvel at number 13. And there's no reason for me to go back and read the rest of it other than if I wanted to. Like, I can get it from there. And it's done with that in mind a lot. And you know, what we always said is that it's one of the most fun things for me was to just start reading an issue. And it's not the same now, because it used to be, you know, you'd be in the 200s or the 300s and you just have to start reading it, because what else would you do? You know, now you're only at 14 or 15, you know, maybe in the 30s, and that's about as high as anything goes.
And you're going to get a whole slate of new Marvel number ones at the end of this year, or some point this year. And you're going to get a whole slate of DC number ones when they launch all those new books. So, as Josh said, it's all about, I mean, Thor is what, number 6? They just, every time there's a new story arc, or a major new arc, not always a new arc, but a major new change in status quo or creative team, you know, we had a new Hawkeye number 1, even though the old Hawkeye hasn't finished yet.
I don't think I realized that. That's hilarious.
They start over. So you're actually in a great time, Andrew, if you're the kind of guy who doesn't want to miss anything, to be reading comics, because they're constantly happening with new volumes.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's been based much more now around, at least at Marvel, it's been based much more now around stories. Mm-hmm. Like, they're organized into stories. DC also, to a certain extent.
Well, DC's,
you know,
announced with this new batch of books that's the direction they're going as well. So I think that seems to be the industry trend at the moment, is the stories over continuity and numbering.
Yeah.
Or strict continuity and strict numbering. So that's good.
You know, find the character you like and follow that, or find the creator you like and follow that. Like, you don't need to go back.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like, if you started reading Batman Endgame, like with the first part of it, was issue like 36 or whatever it was, and you know who Batman is, you're fine.
Well, what he said was, can I start reading the current series without being lost? You're not going to be lost. Like, the worst thing that's going to happen is there's going to be a reference to something that happened earlier, and you're not going to know exactly what that is, but anybody who is reading it is going to be able to pull out from context what they need to know.
Unless the writer's completely failed.
Right, but also, you know, that information's all there, and it's a physical impossibility to actually go back and read everything.
Right.
That's not even how, I don't even know how you'd do that. You wouldn't be able to. So
Go screw.
Nah, I think you'd be fine. Just read, and if you like it, go back because it was good, not because you feel like you have to.
But if you're listening to this podcast, you clearly have to start with this number 1.
Yeah.
Go back. You've got 475 hours to get through before you can properly enjoy this episode.
Yeah.
Plus, there's all the special editions and all the video shows. You've got a lot of work to do.
There will be quizzes.
Anthony from Brooklyn writes and says, this is a question for Josh. I was reading the children's book, The Wicked Big Toddler Goes to New York, to my daughter recently. Basically, a family with a giant toddler visits New York on vacation. Hilarity ensues. Anyway, because the words wicked and toddler were in the title, and this is T-O-D-D-L-A-H spelling, by the way.
Toddler.
I launched into my finest Boston accent. This worked until the family says, let's visit Yankee Stadium. These people are not from Boston. Turns out they're from Maine. I have no idea what the difference is between a Maine accent and a Boston accent. Is there one? As a dialectician from Maine, I thought you'd be able to help.
Yes, there is a definite difference both in temperament and inflection.
Well, before you get into deeply into that, first of all, somebody from Maine's just as big of a Red Sox fan as somebody from Boston.
Yes, that's
in my experience. Also,
yes.
I just came from spending 5 days in Boston with some people who hadn't really spent much time there, and they loved the accents on the crusty old blue-collar guys that built the booth and tore it down. Those guys were, A, awesome, B, hilarious to listen to.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the funniest people on earth. I think that's true. It's a different accent. I actually can't do a Boston accent very well, or even Massachusetts, which is, you know, like this slightly, you know, different variations of it. It's more nasally. Basically the Boston accent is Good Will Hunting. Mm-hmm. It's Ben Affleck and Matt Damon in that. Or Rob Morrow in Quiz Show.
Oh God.
Or I'm thinking about the sort of most obvious ones in movies. Kevin Costner in 13 Days. Do you remember that? Kenny O'Donnell.
That came and went as much as his British accent and Robin Hood.
Special advisor to the president, Kenny O'Donnell. Those are accents. Maine, it's different. I don't know how to describe it differently, but I can't do Boston because I always end up doing Maine. But Maine people are very different than Boston people.
How so?
And it's... Well, Boston people are a lot more aggressive. They're angry, angry white people. And I don't know exactly why.
You're going to get letters.
Maine people are maybe a little more. I know. Maine people are a little. They're happy about it. Like Bill Burr is not like. No, that's totally true. Like he's.
No, you know, they revel in. They revel in their aggression.
It's a very aggressive city.
Yeah.
They're just mad. I don't know why. I guess the weather is awful. I guess that's that. But Maine's weather is even worse. Maine are a little more like rural. It's a little slower. I've heard it say the deep south of the north. I find that offensive on a couple of fronts. Yeah, no. Here's the thing about Maine, though. If you've ever watched a movie with people doing Maine accents, those accents are always awful. They always sound like cartoons to us. Always. Like In the Bedroom or Spitfire Grill, nobody who isn't from Maine can do a Maine accent correctly. It never sounds right. I don't know why.
Because you're all
but
weird.
There you go. There's a wicked big toddler walking around New York. Look at these fucking buildings. They're huge.
Now, is that Maine or Boston?
That's Maine.
It sounds very similar.
It sounds really similar, but there's a difference. Whereas, like Joey Sullivan out Fitchburg there.
Yeah.
It's a different thing.
It's like more pinched. I get it.
Yep. Yeah, and it's ca. Like, we don't... Like, in Maine, we would say ca, but in Boston, they'd say ca. It's a little bit different. And no, that doesn't sound like anything different to anybody else, but
so
I can
let me
it.
Let me ask you a question. Now, do people in Maine like to add an IE sound to everybody's name like they do in Boston?
Toddy?
Yeah.
Mikey?
Yeah.
I think there's bleed over, but I think that's mostly Boston.
Because we had a great moment at the show where some guy came up to our booth asking, you know, he was a salesman, asking who handled our internet. And I said, well, you got to go over there and talk to Chuck. And he goes,
Chucky!
I was like, don't call him Chucky. He's covered in tattoos and won't find it funny. But
covered in tattoos, by the way, is no longer a sign of somebody being tough.
Well, you looked into his eyes. He was running all the IT for that booth. Yeah. He was not in a good place.
I mean, it might be, but I'm just saying that used to be a marker for a scary, tough biker guy, and now it's just dude in his 20s.
With full sleeves?
Yes.
All right.
I know you've been out of Brooklyn a long time, but I mean, it means they can sit through that. I can't, but you know, at this point.
They call you Joshy?
Joshy. My family does, yeah. Oh, you know what? They do. Joshy!
Oh, so much fun. All right, let's squeeze one more in. Inda from Waterford, Ireland. All kinds of great accents in this lady emails this time.
Slunch!
I was wondering if you have any strong opinions on what makes for a successful adaptation of a comic book character or storyline to the big screen. A recent podcast, which one of you commented on how comic book artists and writers are adapting their books to be more movie-like, got me thinking about this once again. I don't remember saying that.
It sounds like something I would say.
For me, a comic book sucks you into its own little world. I almost put the period after sucks, then I realized the sentence wasn't over. For me, a comic book sucks you into its own little world. Its sparse dialogue and limited number of images means you basically have to imagine a lot of the story's action yourself. And much like a silent film, the characters' voices are all inside your head. Paradoxically, it feels both smaller and bigger than a movie when your imagination retains ownership of the action, and that is what makes reading them so special. For me, the only film that I've seen that manages to capture some of these elements is Batman Begins. Even though it may not be the best film of the trilogy, it has a smaller, more silent atmosphere about it, and it, therefore, feels like a Batman flick. Anyway, what do you guys think about this? And I wanted to bring this up because this was the week that Powers came out on PS4. And we got an avalanche of people asking when the Powers Special Edition podcast would be, and the answer is never.
Yeah.
Just because we don't have a PS4, the first episode's free, but I don't want to watch it. If I like it, I want to be able to watch the rest of it, and it just looks terrible.
Yeah, I don't have a good feeling about that. I used to love that book, and I actually fell off the book.
I don't know if I can watch an adaptation of one of my all-time favorite series, and it really was, if you go back. That book was Pick of the Week every other
time. First Pick of the Week ever.
I don't know if I can watch first a really podcast terrible adaptation of that, so...
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, first of all, Waterford is where they got the factory. I didn't go there, though, so sorry about that. There's a flaw that I caught in this question where we're talking about – I don't think you're wrong about Batman Begins and how that you're describing it. I think that those are very good points about that. But it's funny because if you were to describe to me what makes a comic book movie, it's not small and intimate. It's the opposite. It's Jack Kirby's A Gigantic Imagination. It's Asgard. It's the endless worlds. It's the opposite. So what you're describing might be your version of the best Batman movie because it's the most like Batman Year One.
Right.
Or, you know, that version of it. But to me, you know, like I think when we look at it feels like the opposite. It's Avengers. It's Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. And again, comic book. I'm really talking about superhero.
Right.
Because comic book is a medium, not a genre. So we're talking about superhero movies. Like, to me, the gigantic, you know, world building in this huge sense of, oh, my God, you can do anything. The Morrisonian sense of what superheroes should be.
Right.
Which, by the way, DC has completely not managed to do in any way. Which is amazing. They have in the TV shows much more than the movies.
So what to you makes a successful adaptation? For me, it doesn't have anything to do with the source material so much as whether or not it's a successful movie or TV show.
I mean, to me, it's the thing that whatever it is that made you like that character, have they successfully transported that to the other medium?
Right.
So when you are looking at, let's say the Dark Knight. And you look at their version of the Joker, which is very different than the most comic book versions of the Joker up to that point. But did they get the dynamic between that character of the Joker and that character of the Batman into something that is as compelling as what you read in the comic book? And the answer is yes, absolutely. You know, beyond reproach. Whereas if you look at something like any of the Punisher movies, they didn't get it.
Right. For me, the essence of the character... But also, at the end of the day, it has to be a good movie or TV show.
Yes. Like the craft has to be there.
It doesn't matter how faithful it is necessarily if it's bad. It could be the most faithful. Liked Watchmen, but everyone, this is the example of the show, is that it was super faithful, not super compelling as a movie.
But as I said, when we watched Watchmen, I was watching it not as like I was enjoying a movie.
Right.
But like as an art house experiment almost. And like I can't tell you, I feel like I've gone back and watched it again. I you know, every once in a while I'll watch the beginning, but again, it's like, wow, look what they did to adapt that part of the comic book that was already awesome. There. It was, but as a whole thing, as a movie, I don't feel like watching that.
Right.
So that's an adaptation. That's you know, making it exactly the same. I don't know. I mean, honestly, there's a little bit of secret sauce there. Like
there's always an intangible, everything with storytelling, right? But it's just like, is this a good story that's being told with compelling characters, which is to me the most important thing.
So take the first Captain America movie.
Right.
They really captured something of the Captain America story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the spirit and everything was fine. But the third act was kind of crap. So, like, I liked things about that movie, but was it a great movie? No. But were the things I liked about it? Like, it was like... Actually, that feels a lot like comic books. Like, I liked a lot about this, but they kind of failed in the end.
Endings are hard.
Endings are hard. Especially when you're not allowed to have an ending because you have to go to the next movie and crash a ship for no fucking reason. I'm going to crash it.
So like, oh, boy. Like Arrow on the TV show is not almost nothing like the comic, but it's a really compelling version of the character. Now, is it the exact character version of the comics? No. But it is a recognizable version of Oliver Queen, even though he's more like Bruce Wayne, and done in what I consider to be a high-quality way. So, therefore, for me, it's a successful adaptation of Green Arrow. Same thing with Smallville. Smallville was nothing like the Superman comics in the specific sense. It captured the spirit of Superman very well in what I consider to be a compelling and high-quality way. So I thought Smallville was a very successful Superman adaptation. But it all depends on how it's just what the execution of it and whether or not the And you can always get, I'm trying to think of a character that's completely different than their comic book version.
Hawkeye.
Yeah, that's not a good one. I'm trying to think of one that was successful.
Oh, okay.
There must be one. But Hawkeye's a good example of one where they sort of did not do a good job of translating. Although, I guess, didn't they do a good job of translating the Ultimate version of Hawkeye?
I guess so, yeah.
That's what they were going for.
Yeah, they were, and they did that. Which is also the Lego Marvel version of Hawkeye, it turns out.
Yeah.
It is not an exact science. I feel like we spun our wheels a lot trying to put our finger on it. But, I mean, the thing is, like, there's no thing that makes a comic book good. Mm-hmm. So there's no thing that makes a movie good. It just, all the magic has to work together. Yeah. And when we say that, that comics are getting more movie-like, I think it means that they're self-contained. They have an ending. They have a group of sort of characters.
A beginning, middle, and an end. And
yeah, it's not endless like comics were in the 80s, where they just
Second. There's one thing that makes a movie good.
Daniel Craig,
Tim Meadows.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew, Anthony, and Enda for writing in. They wrote to contact@ifanboy.com. Or you can call our voicemail line 888-FANBOY-326-2697 to get on the show, get your questions, be a part of the action. We always like this segment, and we always are happy when good stuff comes in to talk about.
Definitely.
And so quickly, yes, Josh, I heard you mention this on the show last week. We finally got our secret WonderCon plans confirmed. In fact, we have specific information, which we cannot give out until next week. So,
sorry.
We have a day, we have a time, we've got a place, we've got this thing. We just can't tell you what it is until next week. In fact, by the time next week's show comes around, it'll already have come out. We will post it on the website when we're allowed to first mention it. We're also, if you don't go to the website, we'll talk about it next week on the show. But it's gonna be really fun, really exciting, really really kind of scary. So,
all right, if you like, it's just though, if you like what we do and us, and you were on the fence about going to Anaheim, maybe think about going.
And I think Sunday tickets are still available.
Oh, you think Sunday tickets are still available?
Apropos of nothing.
I just
had a random thought, and I thought I would say it out loud in the middle of this discussion.
Right.
But I think Sunday tickets are still available.
If you like, let's say, the kinds of comics and creators that the folks who started iFanboy like, and you're around Sunday,
right?
I believe tickets are available.
Tickets are available.
The folks who started iFanboy.
No, I don't know the tickets are available.
We don't know.
I just said I think.
It'd be good if they were.
It would be good.
One of us would have to travel really far for that to be at that thing.
But if you're going to be at WonderCon, keep your eye on Sunday. And keep your eye out next week for the details. I know everyone's getting annoyed that we've been teasing this for 3 weeks, but it was literally because we didn't have it wasn't confirmed, then it got confirmed, and then something else got confirmed, and now it's like we had to wait. But we wanted to give you guys a heads up in case you were thinking about going to WonderCon.
There you go.
So next week we'll have the info. In the meantime, you can head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show or the books we talked about. If we didn't talk about a book you want to talk about it there, and we can all have a little discussion about it. Or the books we did talk about. If you liked Action Comics, which I know many of you did, I'm sure you'll all come over and say why I'm an idiot, which is fine. I can take it.
It's fine. You're good.
In the meantime, you can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and @ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick is before it goes up, or the show goes up, and you can follow us individually @JAFlanagan, @CSKilpatrick. In both those places.
Oh, I was totally waiting for a third name. I was waiting for that third beat, and I was like, it's not coming. It's your turn. You like the shit, it's never coming. Space. The story balls are never coming again. Hey, if you like the show, you can write a review on iTunes, or you can just help get the word out through your various social networks and stuff, or tell your friends about it, or if you talk, you go to the comic shop. Hey, did you hear that iFanboy show? You like that show?
Can you
like
believe those guys hated Action Comics?
Can you me am so happy about that. If you ever want to get
my hands just clinched just hearing you say that.
Like if I had been in person, you'd have just punched me in the face.
I would have punched you in the face.
I wouldn't have blamed him for it.
No.
But we can still use more listeners. I think we've shown that we're not at the fuck it threshold. Yeah. So if you want to send some more people our way, that's awesome. Or if you like it, that would be great. So thank you. That's it.
That's all the show we've got for you this week.
What do we do now?
I don't know. While you were talking, I scratched my head and came away with some blood, so that's always fun.
Right. Oops.
That's a good time. Go take care of that. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh, and at least you don't have to worry about your hair going gray, Connor. Oh, I did the old guy thing. Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! No one wants that! This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.